listening to Not So Live from Asteroid G, going for a wild hunt on an alien world. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hey, your buddy, Mike the Ghoul. Time traveling through the eras as well. Was not expecting that in this movie, but we got it.
We are going to be discussing Predator, Killer of Killers, the recent Hulu release from Dan Trachtenberg, who's basically in charge of the franchise now. He did Prey. He's doing the upcoming Predator Badlands. Apparently, from what I understand, all of these ideas came to him when he was an 8-year-old and first heard about Predator, and he has just been in love with the franchise ever since.
He can have the keys to this as far as I'm concerned. He is giving us, and I mean this in the most loving way possible, but no disrespect, he is giving us what I thought we were going to get from Shane Black that we didn't get. And he can keep the keys because he's killing it.
Yeah, Shane Black's The Predator was atrocious.
Yeah, it's a movie that exists in the lore of it as a Predator movie in name only. And I'm disappointed because I expected more out of Ponch.
Yeah, I kind of have to feel like we're just going to ignore everything from that movie forever. But pretty much like everyone ignores Predator 2 now.
You know what? Go back and rewatch it, because I did not that long ago. Not to you, because I'm sure you have, but anybody out there listening to this.
And it's fine.
It's not as bad as you remember.
It's not
it's still pretty bad.
Although we're supposed to be talking about the new movies. I did like the sequence in Predator 2 where all those like government agents are stalking the Predator going, we know how he works, he can't see us. And then the thing switches to UV light and suddenly it sees all of them and just slaughters them. That was hilarious.
Kills are bigger and better in the second one.
So that I liked. But Trachtenberg did a great job showing how a Predator sequel really could work by effectively making the first movie again, but setting it with like the Cherokee in the past in like the 1700s and just making a very interesting movie that shows something that's been hinted at in the Predator movies, but never really codified until that film. The Predators just keep coming to our planet every few hundred years and they stalk whoever they want and they're just looking for a good warrior.
Yeah, and we got the answer to that, I guess, in his take on, you know, Predator, Killer of Killers. And I didn't know what this was going to be going into it. I was not expecting a collection of short stories like this, and I loved every bit of it. I thought it was great, and I loved that they were covering different time periods, which I was not expecting either. That was very cool.
I think it's interesting, because on the one hand, I think any one of these stories could have been their own film. Like, I could have watched an entire movie about the Viking tribe, for example, just like
100%.
Like her, where she's a young kid and her dad gets killed in front of her by this Viking leader, and then she has to like build herself up and amass her warriors and go off on this like hunt, and then like a standard Predator movie, halfway in while she's on her progress with her team, suddenly the Predator shows up and it becomes this whole thing. It would have had a different effect to her story though, is the thing. Like, instead of her getting her revenge and then the Predator shows up, instead it would be like this thing where her revenge is a side plot to something else. So I can kind of understand, like in each of these, I can kind of understand why they decided to tell them as short stories instead of bigger films.
Very effectively done, and just like the right amount of time too. Like they got a little bit longer each time. The first one was very short, it felt like, compared to the second one. And the third one felt a little drawn out, but I do like the different aspects of it. And we'll get to the third act of that, but very, very good. But the first one, like, I was waiting for a whole movie of Vikings, and I was into Ursa's story. I liked her. I thought that when, spoiler alert, when her son dies, like, I thought that was a big character point for her, and they held on to that as the movie went along, which I thought was really great. It was really good. And I thought she was just a really compelling character that, like, I wanted to see more of. And I'm glad we got to see more of her at the end, to be honest.
Yeah, I can see what they're going for. Because, like, in the Predator movies, the Predator shows up as just, like, this agent of chaos that suddenly sets the movie on a different path. But for these short stories, the Predator was definitely used to specifically comment on the story they were put into. So, like, the Predator shows up to attack Ursa and her team just as she's finally gotten her glory and her chance for vengeance, as if to say, this is the punishment you get for trying to go on a quest for vengeance. So,
and like, and she got to see like her son kill the guy after he couldn't do it earlier in the movie, so she's proud of what her son's done now. Like, my wife loves Viking culture, so like I was into this stuff. I thought we were gonna get more of it, and I was disappointed we didn't get more, but still glad to get what we got. I thought it was really cool that, like, the Predator was different for each of them. And I thought they kind of almost were honed into like the time period they were in. Like the Viking one was very, very large. The one in the Asian period was very stealthy, samurai-like. And, you know, the one in the craft was just, I mean, he just looked like a badass fighter pilot, I guess. But like, it was very cool that like they had different aspects of the Predator across time to give you different yautjas. I thought that was really neat.
I've always gotten the sense from not just this movie, but the Predator movies in general, that the Predators, while having massive, interesting tech, scale themselves to whatever time period they're in, whoever they're fighting, so that they're not getting too big an advantage. Because the whole point of their culture is that they're supposed to have a battle to the death and see if they can handle the enemy they're going to. So while they can have a slight advantage, they're not supposed to overplay their hand.
Yeah, yeah. So they are just supposed to be that force that's, you know, like you said, looking for that glorious death. Like, to die in battle, to be killed by somebody who you couldn't best is probably the greatest glory they can think of.
Or to rip out a bunch of spines and go back a hero. Yeah.
Either one. But either one.
Who doesn't like a good spine ripping, you know?
I mean, right? I mean, there were some good spine rippings in this movie. Like, let me tell you.
So the first one was the Vikings, which you've discussed. Then we can move on to the Japanese setting, I think 1600s. And that one was interesting because they purposely, like, this was done by an anime house. They, like, the co-directed by an anime director. And they specifically made the Japanese one have almost no dialogue.
Yep.
Which was really interesting. I mean, obviously it works in a certain sense because the hero is a ninja who's going after his, effectively his samurai brother who betrayed him. And so as a stealthy person, he's not going to talk much anyway, but then they get into like their confrontation and there's still no dialogue. It just keeps being silent for all of that. Just like sounds and music and like all of that instead.
I really liked the feel that gave you. And like, I believe that like it gave you more, I think, about the characters too, because it flash forwards 20 years. Like, he hadn't seen his brother in 20 years. Like, he left after his brother betrayed him and never came back. And now he's coming back to exact his revenge. And like, you're watching them fight and you're like, oh man, what's this level of revenge that he's going to, is he going to kill him? Like, what's going on? They're really going at it. And like, you know, he seemed to have the advantage on his brother in most of the fight, too. Like, it seemed like the armor was really keeping the brother from losing an arm here and there. So I think that the shinobi ninja was the better fighter at the end of the day compared to the samurai. And then, you know, all hell breaks loose when the Predator comes in and shit just goes crazy.
Which, again, gets to that whole idea of the Predator acts as this chaotic element that furthers the storyline. And in this one, it's the brother goes to attack his brother to get his honor back. And then because the Predator shows up, the two, in a way, kind of reunite. But by fighting the Predator and finding themselves, their vengeance against each other still, in the end, causes them to leave apart because the brother dies.
Yeah.
So, like, there's always a cost to be paid in these things, which is interesting, I think, that it furthers the story to a certain extent. Which then gets us to the third one with the fighter pilot or fighter pilot trainee in World War II who wants to go in the air. And because the Predator shows up in their ship, he finally gets to be in the air and then realizes that was a bad idea.
There was some real far-fetched stuff going on. Like, that kid was very, like, spitting bubblegum, that wildcat fighter pilot thing together, like, you know, keeping
the bullet.
Shit was breaking left and right. He's holding it together with a wrench and a screwdriver. I'm like, this kid's dead 10 times over right now, but you know what, it's a Predator movie and I'm having fun with it, so let's just keep going. And I've never seen that kind of an aerial battle
in
a Predator movie. It was different
and that was nice. I liked how fun it was. I liked that it gave us something new because we don't really see aerial combat from Predators. There was a lot of cool ideas in there. I do think of the three main stories, it was probably the weakest, just because I don't feel like there was much of a character arc for the kid. It was
They tried, but I didn't feel it. Yeah.
We discussed, like, with Jack Sparrow, how he's basically at the end of his adventure. He wants a ship, then he gets a ship. Kid wants to be in the air, he gets to be in the air. And while the Predator kind of makes him think, wow, that was scary, you don't get the vibe that he's learned too much from it.
Yeah, he got lucky and survived the battle. He definitely should have died in
three or four times. Yeah, if the Predator didn't kill him, the German airspace they were flying over definitely should have.
What was that completely unbelievable sequence, though? And, like, it's a movie. Have fun with it, sure. But, yeah. like, when they're flying, he's taking the Predator into the fight zone, like, into the kill box there. And, like, there's just hellfire raining everywhere. And this guy just makes it through this kid.
Yeah. and this kid in his first plane. Yeah. Yeah,
I can only suspend my disbelief so much.
I know. That's part of the problem. Which then ties into the fourth segment, where, like, the three warriors we've seen get pulled out of time, and they're now in the, I only assume, the future, because they were cryogenically frozen, on a Predator planet, and they have to fight the Predators on their home turf in, like, a battle to the death. There were, like, I like the ideas behind the sequence. I think it was interesting how it does world building on that. Although it does imply that if every hero, which the movie does, if every hero that fights off the Predators eventually gets stolen and cryogenically frozen, then Danny Glover is somewhere there waiting to have his own battle to the death, which is, I don't want to think about that because, again, Predator 2. But
I'm too old for this shit.
There was one detail that struck me that was a little weird. The kids' pilot sequence happens over the Atlantic. He's specifically there. That's what they say. I looked up the plot line and everything. He's there to fight in the Atlantic.
Oh, so North African camp. Okay, I got the wiki pulled up too to look. Yeah. Okay, I would have swore that was the South Pacific, and I didn't understand. Okay.
That was weird. He was over the Atlantic. So he's there to fight the Germans. And they make a plot deal about the fact that he's learned Japanese in case he gets captured by the enemies. Why?
You know, I did not catch that, but they did. And I didn't think about that where he was stationed versus who would be fighting. I guess that they're trying to...
It was so that he could communicate with the ancient Japanese person, because language doesn't evolve that far in 400 years, although it'd evolve a little. I certainly understand that. But they could have just set it in the Pacific, and then I wouldn't have had an issue.
Yeah, no, I didn't even catch that. And that's an interesting continuity error right there. Just, but I mean, I guess at that point in 1942, you are knowing you're battling both of them. So, I mean, there are going to be troops in all areas, I guess.
I don't know. No, I'm not a World War II historian. But as far as I know, the Japanese front didn't come that far over to North Africa. They were mostly in Asia and dealing with
Americans.
There's
a lot of them to deal with over there. There's a lot of them to take care of on that side of the world. So, we'll see.
So I don't think, and plus, like, North Africa was definitely Germans' territory, and they were very clearly delineated. You get these chunks of the world, we get these chunks of the world. Almost like the Portuguese and the Spanish back during, like, the Age of Imperialism, that kind of thing, you know?
I wonder if they kind of did that, though, just because, like, he was a trainee.
I guess.
And who knows where he was going to end up. Like, maybe
explain it, or maybe he just liked Japanese culture. I don't know. But it definitely was...
Something it didn't need stuck. To be there, to
it
your point.
It didn't need to. No, a simple have them in the Pacific instead of the Atlantic, and I don't even think about it. They need him, obviously, because they're going to steal a Predator ship to escape. And that's, like, the second you introduce a fighter pilot, I'm like, oh, so he's going to fly a Predator ship at some point, because that's just...
Yeah.
It was a Why little too much obvious plotting.
Why else is he here?
So, I don't know, like... The back half of the movie was a little weaker for me than the front half, if I'm being really honest. I liked it in general, and I think the world building was interesting to a point. But there were some niggling flaws for me that I didn't have with Prey.
I agree. I can agree with that. I think that I guess weird to say that there's four acts of this movie, but I mean, I guess you can say it that way because, you know, there's four segments, call it what you will. I thought the third act was by far the weakest, even though the kid Torres had a good story. I thought he was a fun character. I liked the fourth act. I thought it really showed the culmination of working together. Like the Asian guys trying to get that across to Eartha. Like, hey, we need to work together here or we are all going to die. Which I think was a really good, you know, way to handle that. Like, how are they going to not all just get killed? Because any one of these predators can kill them in 3 seconds if they wanted to because they're predators. So how are they going to get out of it?
That's part of that world building again, is now that you've actually survived a predator and you're a killer of a killer, they don't feel like they're going to hold back the second time around. They're not going to sit there and go, we don't have to use all our tech. They can use anything they want to kill these people now, and they are loaded to the gills with weapons.
Yeah, and plus, nice touch with the weapon aspect too. They all gave him something from their, you know, time period, you know, the sword. But the kid's like, this isn't even mine. That was Raphael's
musket. Yeah, he's trying to figure out how to use it.
So there's the callback to Predator 2 again, which was also the same musket that was in Prey. The continuity there keeps going. This, I wonder how much, it's making me think how much significance does this pistol actually have throughout the lore of Predator if it's something they've kept for so long.
Well, and that also, like, we don't know what year the fourth act of the movie plays. I thought it was the future.
Yeah, it could be. Who knows?
But it could just as easily be, like, 1950-something, and then that is the musket that Danny Glover eventually gets. You don't know. Like, I'm not a prop person. I don't pay that close of attention.
That's the continuity. That musket Danny Glover has in the second one is the same musket from Prey. Like, that's the continuity. It is the Raphael name on it is the same musket.
So there you go. So it's like, so it could be, this could take place between Prey and Predator 2. The timeline's pretty fucked. Let's just be honest about that.
Well, I mean, we got, you know, Ursa from 841 AD was the year that was. The sword, Japanese, 1609. So that's already an 800-year jump right there. Yeah. And then 1942 was the World War II with the bullet. And who knows where battle was. You could have been pre-Jesus Christ. Who knows? Like, it could be any point in time.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to do time travel necessarily. I think they get frozen, and then they get thawed out when they're ready to fight. So we move forward in time the whole time. Like, Predators have not done time travel at all. But...
good.
It could be that the musket is used by Torres and then is given to Danny Glover later, or it could be that Danny Glover was then captured later and then he's frozen somewhere and that musket just keeps coming back because the Predators are dicks.
Well, I mean, I think that there is a better than, I would say it's better than a 0%. I'm not going to say 50-50 because you don't know, but we do see Naru at the end of the movie in one of those containers. So if Naru's there...
I was a little annoyed by it at the start because I'm like, how does this fit into the world building from the previous films from like Predator, Predator 2, Predators, that kind of thing. But then I remembered that Lawrence Fishburne shows up in Predators as like the crazy Vietnam guy. And originally, from what I had heard from rumors and saw, that was supposed to be Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, implying they captured him after he won and put him on a new planet for a new hunt. And then this... kind of ties into the same thing. If you survive a Predator attack, they're gonna use you for a future battle.
And so, not to dip into Predator, the Shane Black one, which was bad, but awful. Like, you kind of sort of, I guess, got that with like they're trying to find the toughest warriors, and but they weren't using that to DNA splice themselves into the ultimate warrior. They were just looking for the greatest warriors. So like he's kind of onto something there, but like, I don't know, but I mean, we'll see. Maybe we get an animated Arnold next time. Who knows?
I'm perfectly okay never discussing the Predator again. Let's just be honest about that. That movie is, I love Shane Black's movies. Don't get me wrong. Like he has done some really great stuff. His writing on Lethal Weapon, his writing and directing on The Long Kiss Goodnight. I'm a fan of Iron Man 3, even though I know a lot of people don't actually like that movie that much.
Stronger than Iron Man 2.
It has some really interesting ideas where he just improvises weapons without any of his money to help him out. Like, and then there's Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which was his first like movie back before Iron Man 3. And I like that movie a lot, too. I think he can do really good writing whether or not he's working with an IP. The Predator is not that movie.
No, and it's sad so because a lot of us, we were excited.
Yeah.
You know, pumped coming back, you know, after we got the Adrian Brody one with Topher Grace, which was...
I actually liked that movie. I like Predators.
A masterpiece compared to what we got from Shane Black.
That's true.
So... you know, and I don't know, like Predator has gone up and down, sideways, left and right over the past damn near 40 years. Like, you know, we've been saying 87, maybe I think was the first one.
Something like.
So it's been all over the place. So I like where it's been trending now. Prey was exceptionally strong. Was it the same story over again, but done better or whatever you want to say? I don't know.
I mean, it has the bones. Yeah, it has the bones of the original Predator. It has the same like arc structure as the original Predator. It uses it to comment on its characters differently, but it is like, you could kind of like, what is it? The bas relief rubbing of one over the other and get like a similar like structure to it. And that's fine. That's fine. I think if you're going to reboot and like prove that a Predator movie can work again, you kind of have to go off of the idea of let's do a similar structure to it. Prey did it great. Like, I think the name Prey was supposed to imply to you, we're kind of just doing the same Predator again. It's fine. Now that we're not doing that, he's definitely gone off the reservation. I mean, the next movie is going to be even more out there because it looks like we're getting a Predator as the hero.
we've kind of sort of got that in Alien versus Predator way back when.
Which no one wants to acknowledge, even though they weren't that. The first one wasn't that bad.
First one wasn't that bad. Wasn't Second that bad. One was atrocious. First one's was. Fine. Yeah. Was it what we hoped we were getting? No, but it's not bad.
It's not bad.
But I mean, you know, Scar, you know, that from Alien vs. Predator kind of was almost that anti-hero thing. And maybe we do get, I can use a little bit of Predator on my side for once. Cause like, you just, he never scared me because you always just knew if he was around, you were dead.
Yeah.
So, yeah. He's on my side once, you know, he helped me out.
It was a shock factor. It was applying a slasher movie formula to an 80s beef chunk action movie, which no one expected. Yeah. Like, it's a huge twist that happens, but, like, you are correct. The second you get used to it, you're like, wow, you're just dead.
Yeah, you're just dead. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. Yeah, you hear that little crackle, crackle, like, that's it. That's it. We're dead. We're not... Yeah. I'd rather have Predator come kill me than be xenomorphed and cocooned. I'll just
That's
put it that way.
That's fair. It's quicker. It's a much faster death. I do appreciate that. Well.
The things we talk about on this podcast. We have fun here.
So, I think Killer of Killers was really good.
Solid.
Prey was better, but Killer of Killers was really good, and it does leave me anticipating Predator Badlands in November.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that. I saw a trailer for that when we just went to the movies and saw something. I can't remember what. It wasn't Lilo and Stitch, because they're not showing Badlands for that. But we saw something in the theater.
Shouldn't they?
Why not?
They're why both not? Alien movies. What?
One's cute and fluffy. The other one is Stitch? Not. Yes. but yeah, I'm looking forward to Badlands. I think that's going to be quite good. I was very happy with this. I'm interested that this is like the highest rated Predator movie. I think I saw a thing on Rotten Tomatoes. It's like 98% approved. Like Prey, I think, is like 94 or something on Rotten Tomatoes. I get it, but I think Prey, to your point, is overall a better movie. But this was good. This was some good Predator. This wasn't that bullshit. This wasn't a cash grab. This felt like it meant something to Dan Trachtenberg in there. And I love that he's taken this in the direction that he is. I'm looking forward to it.
If I had to guess, and this is just me having that conspiratorial mind, the 94% for Prey versus a 98% for this is because Prey has a female lead throughout the entire movie.
It could very well be.
You're going to get someone sexist who's like, these are male movies. Why did you put a female in this?
You know, ladies can do things now, man. That's why.
I thought the movie was awesome, so that's fine.
Prey was fantastic. I'll just watch Prey randomly. Like, it's one of those movies I'm like, I threw it on, like, when I was gaming the other night. I'm like, this is a good movie.
So good.
A really good movie. But this was good, too. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, it was good. And, again, Badlands is coming out. We'll probably revisit at that point and discuss it when it comes out, because,
very excited for that. Hell yeah, man.
Hell yeah.
Definitely.
This has been Not So Live from Asteroid G, definitely getting killed by a predator because of our asthma. I'm your host, Mike Finkelstein.
Hey, your buddy, Mike the Ghoul. Yeah, you know, if you hear it, you're over. Just appreciate the quick death and hope you can take a little bit of them with you.
That clicking, and then it's going to make your voice beck at you. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Want some candy?
I do not need it replaying our Terminator outtakes back in my ear when it kills me. I'm just saying. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Please do that. That'd be great.
We will see you all next time.